For March the 20th, 2015, we talk about Nintendo's bizarre mobile announcements, Saints Row 4 got out of hell, and we ask you about stealth in games. Welcome to the 98th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meissman.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, I'm going to have to beg your forgiveness because I'm recovering from a nasty cold or sinus infection or whatever it was that laid me low last week.
Ooh, you got yours.
Yeah, I got mine. I got my one big infection of the year.
But you got to watch Twin Peaks.
Yes, this is true. I did watch the pilot of Twin Peaks. That was only after I watched all of Parks and Rec. Watch the first season of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and I was way too, like, just filled with, you know, happy people being nice. I was like, I want to watch like a small town in the wake of a poor young girl being murdered. So yeah, that's what happened with me. I was the kind of sick where I couldn't even play video games because focusing my eyes hurt. So I just laid in bed listening to the television.
I feel like sickness and like fever dream plus Twin Peaks could have some interesting effects.
I was on the upswing. I think I was trying to prolong the madness.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is there a new Twin Peaks?
Yeah, it's they're releasing a nine episode season 3 in 2016. But okay. I've got the Blu-rays because I'm fancy.
Nice.
Yeah. How is everybody? How's the past week been? Anything new and unusual? Anything exciting?
Mm-mm.
St. Patrick's Day.
Oh yeah, that is today.
Are y'all wearing green?
Yes.
Is an internet pinch a poke? Should I go on Facebook and poke you?
Oh yes, you'll be the first person to poke somebody in 3 years.
Yeah,
like the servers will catch fire. Like, wait a minute, we didn't expect anybody to do that. I thought we got rid of that button.
Is it still on Facebook? I actually don't know.
Yes, it is.
Huh.
What was the intended use of that?
To creep on exes without actually have to say a word.
So basically there was no good purpose for that.
Yeah.
Well, I think there was an actual interview where Zuckerberg was like, we just thought we'd throw in a function that had no functionality.
Right.
and see what people did with it. Mm-hmm. So
and
it
the
was
answer
kind of more
is
of a,
nothing.
Or yeah, yeah. I had people get mad at me for not poking them back.
Mm-hmm.
Those are also people who are crushing on me. So
yeah,
that's eventually I think someone said, you know, if you poke someone, it means you want to have sex with them.
And it's like the hanky code.
It's like, oh, I got some friends I need to stop poking.
Yeah. Uh-oh. It's like those rubber bracelets when we were in high school. Like,
yeah.
Oh man, that is humorous. Yeah, and then they're like they added the like the Ultra Poke apps where it could be like you give a tummy raspberry to so and so,
in case you want it to be more creepy.
Yep. Yes, you treated this person that you're crushing on like your niece. Oh man, yeah, that is I don't want to think about that. How about you, Ben?
What about me?
Yeah, well, what you been up to this past week?
Are you wearing green, motherfucker?
Yeah, are you wearing green? Okay, yeah. So, what is an e-poke? Are you wearing green?
I have not poked anyone in a long... that sounds weird. All right, let's start over on that one. I have a green hoodie,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not wearing it, so I'm not wearing green. But, yeah, I got nothing, man. It's been a normal week.
It has been a normal week. I have been informed by the Irish Anti-Defamation League that I can't do my usual Irish sound, so I'm just going to have to do it without the accent. Ha, ta, 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 ta. There we go. Yeah, that kind of takes the fun out of it if I can't sound like a leprechaun. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Not that we do, you know, other things than quote onion titles.
Yeah.
I need to get a little more warmed up apparently. Yeah. But there was the Irish prepare for reinforcing of the stereotypes for St. Patrick's Day.
Wait, is the O like reinforcement of the stereotypes?
Oh, the stereotypes. Yeah,
that's pretty good. Yeah. David, how about you? You wearing green?
I'm wearing green. Yeah, I'm in the middle of spring break, so that's kind of fun.
Oh, isn't that nice for you, college boy?
Yeah, really, once you get to graduate school, it really doesn't change anything.
I mean, are you still going in and standing in front of a room of disinterested people?
I'm still grading papers, and I'm still, like, working on my projects, so it basically saves me, like, the 1 hour a day I actually have class.
Oh, well. Yeah. But, I think that gets all of us caught up. Why don't we proceed with the episode?
Let's do it.
Yeah, so we got the usual story for you today with our trio of the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. Let's go ahead and jump right in with the brief, where we talk about news that's happening in video games. Does anybody have a story they would like to lead with?
Have you guys realized that our three segments together is the brief multiplayer grind?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah. Which I think we predicted Destiny by like at least 2 years.
All right.
Yeah. Well, you chiming in sounds like you got something to go first with, Mr. Smarty Pants.
I got a little thing. I heard it on the radio this morning, but I also found an article about it. But it's that Nintendo signed a contract with DNA, but it's spelled D-E-N-A.
Yeah, I had those open as well. I think we have a rare triple swoop. Dennis, did you get swooped as well?
I did not.
Okay.
Because I'm an individual.
Oh, so I will course correct as Ben explains what's happening with DNA.
Double swoop, yeah. Yeah, basically, so Nintendo is probably going to be taking their IP into the mobile gaming realm, which is cool because now you can play their games without having to buy a Nintendo product, which... may or may not be cool. Maybe. I don't know. Depends on what. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. So, possibly play Mario on the phone. And the one thing I heard in addition is that, so they signed a deal for this, and then DNA bought a whole bunch of Nintendo stock, and Nintendo bought a whole bunch of DNA stock. So, that's, yeah. I don't know. So, apparently, they think something cool is going to happen.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's illegal. Like, that's got to be illegal, right?
I mean, it's just establishing a stake in both companies. Like it's a way to handle some kind of like merger or acquisition without actually signing any kind of real partnership. Either of them could ditch the other at any time.
Yeah, did they buy the stock before announcing or after announcing?
It wasn't specified, but I assume it would be after because before sounds more illegal than
yeah,
after.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, just kind of saying, all right, and to show you that we've got skin in the game and that we are both invested in the other's success, here is a gesture of goodwill.
It's like a corporate promise ring.
A corporate purity ring. Oh man, yeah, they're engaged to be merged, but yeah, and it's funny that we went right to like the financial side of it as opposed to like any kind of game possibility because all these announcements today from you know the statement that Nintendo put out feel really investor-y.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and the game possibilities that were there have been largely terrifying.
I mean, like, have you seen any indications? Well,
the big one that, like, I don't know if this is just, like, echo speak, like, all of these articles are citing, like, each other, but the big one they all reference is apparently there was some, like, hedge fund manager that, like, recently was, like, published an open letter pushing Nintendo to do this, and he was real big into, like, the monetization, and he like one of his quotes is something along the lines of, imagine how many people pay 99 cents for Mario to jump just a little higher.
The quote here is, just think of paying 99 cents just to get Mario to jump a little bit higher. This guy, his name is Seth Fisher. He goes on to say, Nintendo needs to embrace this thematic change in consumer demand, behavior, and expectations to stay relevant when talking about the fact that consumers no longer require a physical product. Require is different than desire, right?
Right.
Yes. Yep. Also, I think we've established on this show that Mario has the perfect jump.
Right.
So any changing to it would be heresy.
Yes, I would pay money to keep it the same. Like if he kept jumping progressively higher, and the longer you wait, the more you have to pay to get it back to normal. No, why is he doing like that? Like this? Oh no, it's the kid cool jump.
No,
no. All of a sudden, Mario starts handling like Sonic. What's happening? Yeah, I don't know. So. In the absence of any kind of actual, you know, product from this, any kind of like game announcement, anything that they've been working on, this just kind of feels like a last minute ditch. Let's see here. We're approaching the end of March. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got 2 weeks before the end of March. Guess what the end of March is?
End of fiscal year?
Yep.
Yeah, I... They did announce, they said that, you know, assumptions that stating that this means that Mario is going to be for other platforms is false. Mm-hmm. And they basically, you know, seem to suggest, you know, that this isn't about bringing their existing IP to other platforms. And they made some suggestions of, you know, spoke a lot about basically we need to create products that will make people more interested in our games. So it sounds like this could likely just mean they're going to try to make marketing products or they're going to try to do the companion app thing.
Yeah.
Has anything really interesting been done with companion apps yet in gaming?
Not that I've seen.
Not really.
Like, there was some smoke around, like, Watch Dogs, but I don't know that panned out.
Yeah. Or I thought...
What about that... You Don't Know Jack game, does that count as a companion app?
That feels like the game. Like, that's how you control it.
Yeah.
It's not even an app. It's you go to a website and enter a code.
Yeah, it's brilliant, and I'm glad someone finally did that. That's on current gen versus on I don't even know what we're calling PS3 and Xbox 360.
Last gen.
There we go. Yeah. I want to say that Assassin's Creed had something where, you know, you can manage the agents that you have sent on missions from your phone.
Yeah,
but I think it's more just because it would make sense rather than me actually having heard anything about it.
I think that's related to the Ubisoft's weird free to play stuff or like freemium where you can buy extra agents and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Far Cry 4 has like this like basic strategy game / like pseudo company running game, which basically instead of grinding through the game, doing the arena elements, you can just like play this app and fairly quickly unlock things.
Oh,
so like the some people I don't know. This sort of seems like Nintendo showing up late to the game again,
Like a little bit. And it's a real problem that they haven't announced any kind of actual game because all that's left is the business appeal. Which is, okay, we're going to make this a second screen experience. We're going to make this a marketing opportunity. There's a super gross quote from Reggie Fils-Aimé from back in 2013 where he says that Nintendo is constantly thinking about how to leverage mobile as a marketing vehicle.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Whereas if they just kind of came out and said, hey, we're partnering with the Pokemon company to make an actual, you know, Pokemon trading card game or, you know, like a Pokemon companion app or, you know, battle game, whatever, like that would be that like people would just like throw a shit fit and not even worry about like weird corporate manipulation that might be happening to them.
Yeah,
we just realized that Pokemon actually has a mobile device in it called a Pokedex.
What were you saying, Dennis?
I like the image that that quote casts of just like, you know, there's a Nintendo marketer sitting up in bed at night and his wife is like, what's wrong, honey? I can't figure out how to use mobile as a marketing platform. Constantly thinking about it.
Yeah, we need to maximize our brand saturation.
How? But how?
And a lot of these articles, like a number of them, cite what is it? King that makes Candy Crush Saga.
Right.
Oh God.
I don't know. Like, I guess I can understand that from a business standpoint, but from a game standpoint, I feel like it's like, don't worry, a company that made a universally despised game got a lot of money out of
like
it.
Like, a universally derided by people that we're likely to hear speaking, but, like, universally beloved by people who actually play games on their phone and pay money for this. Like, I mean, we're stretching the definition of universally, but I would say that calling Candy Crush universally despised is narrowing the focus of like who you consider to be capable of despising things.
I have no evidence to back this up, but I would say I think people that like Candy Crush largely like it because nothing better is available at that time. I think it's largely people that either can't afford full games at that time and are doing it because it's freemium.
Yeah, or they just don't want to pay anything. Like, it's not that they can't afford it, it's just that they don't pay money for games.
I mean more in a economic sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Dennis, Jen, she doesn't like paying for games, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking she's played Jewel Mania for 2 years plus now.
Yeah,
and it's familiar, it's fun, and it's easy as a filler. So it's not like she's super into it, mm-hmm. but she definitely likes it enough to keep on playing it.
Mm-hmm. I stand corrected.
Yeah, I'm going to segue this into the other story here that I've got related to Nintendo. Because it is similarly without detail, but I think it sheds light on their broader strategy, which is, you know, kind of part of this is like a large like membership platform kind of thing that will include, you know, tablets, smartphones, PCs, Nintendo 3DS, Wii U, and a new dedicated game system called that is currently prototype named or codenamed the NX. Which is what they're calling a next generation hardware concept, kind of, which is plugged into this, for lack of a better word, just nebulous online infrastructure ecosystem that they haven't said, like, you know, in any real terms what it actually does.
It's a cash grab to pad their numbers.
I mean, yeah. So, like, this does one thing, which says that, like, Nintendo isn't planning on just, like, laying down and dying. Like, you know, you generally want to see that a company has plans for at least the next 2 years, and they're not ready to, like, announce anything about this until, you know, next year is what they're saying. But, like, if they come out and say, yeah, we got nothing, people are going to say, if the Wii U is doing this bad, could this be it for Nintendo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It seems like a lot of the kind of the chatter I read, kind of that's how they read it, is basically this is Nintendo kind of saying we're not going to do the Sega thing and become a publisher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It's really weird, and I kind of wish that they had waited until, well, I guess they don't show up at E3. They have like a side event. Or, for the past 2 years, they've been doing, like, the Nintendo Directs. But this wasn't even a Nintendo Direct because they don't even have any video game footage to show. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, David.
This is, you know, maybe kicking the dead horse or whatever, but I don't quite understand why they just don't release a system that's competitive with the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Competitive just, like, on tech specs?
Yeah, like, I, I, I feel like they're the one company that's basically never going to have to worry about developing exclusive franchises. Mm-hmm. So if they just made a console that could play the basic blockbuster games, that could play Call of Duty, when it comes out each year, like, it seems like that would be an easy way to have a viable system.
To make it just like everybody else?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nintendo. Forget about style. Let's get more polygons in there.
Yeah.
I know. I guess I feel like that's basically what they're doing right now is, for the most part, people buy Nintendo to play Nintendo games. And you can play Nintendo games just as well on a system that can also play other games.
Except without, the input devices and stuff like that. Like, they have worked their way into their own niche that is actually doing kind of interesting and cool stuff, but in a very limited scope, like, within just the stuff that they touch. They've burned every third-party bridge they have, especially EA and Ubisoft.
Yeah, no doubt there. I think the Wii was so wildly successful beyond anyone's craziest dreams that they kind of are looking for a way to recapture that. I mean, the Wii was dirt cheap to make and to buy, and everyone loved it.
Yeah.
And it opened up new markets or new audiences to gaming, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like Nintendo is trying to recapture that magic. And when you only release a new console once every, however many years, a swing and a miss means you're hurting for a good long time.
Yeah. So, I wonder if this is just a way for them to kind of keep their costs down. But even checking this out now, there's an article on Ars Technica that says at least as of 2013, Wii U's were still being sold at a loss, which is something that Nintendo has never done.
that's I'm surprised to hear that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because it makes total sense. They lowball the power on their system. They say, hey, yeah, it's gonna be kind of a last gen experience, except for all the cool stuff we're gonna make. That's what's gonna get butts in the seats. Come on, let's bring it. And then they swing around and say, well, actually, no, we're still losing money on this, which is, I think, the first time they've done that, at least in recent memory.
Is that? Yeah. I wonder how much of that is, because, the touch screens and the extra screens and things like that. Whereas this is almost, not just a game system, but also a handheld rolled in.
I think that in general, the gamepad probably cost them a lot. And again, this is us doing amateur business analysis, so I feel I feel kind of goofy. But it's no secret that they just really had a swing and a miss on marketing this thing as something that is an entirely new system. Anybody who had the Wii kind of swung around and said, okay, the Wii U, that just kind of sounds like an extra little dingus that I plug into my Wii, which has been collecting dust anyway. I don't need any new dinguses because I'm not really that interested in, the Wii anymore, as opposed to playing it up as something new.
The Wii U, that's like that plastic tennis racket I have, right?
Yeah.
That's why I was a little bit surprised that they just referred to this as the NX, as opposed to something that does sound a little bit more obviously new, as opposed to their current theme of two random letters or three random letters.
I mean, this is still just a code name. They called the N64 the Ultra 64. They called GameCube Dolphin. They called Wii the Revolution. This thing isn't going to actually have a branded name until they get further in development and actually decide, probably, hopefully, make a better decision with this name than they did with the Wii U.
Yeah, I guess what I'm just saying though is if one of their core problems is recognizability or what you're saying, mm-hmm. I feel Dolphin or Revolution or stuff like that that's kind of memorable and at least a little snappy, whereas NX is just doesn't mean anything. It's not memorable.
Hmm. It's not sticky.
Yeah. Well, it's got all the features of the NY and just a little bit more, accommodation on price.
The city of New York? I was selling the city that never sleeps. New York in a box.
No, that's a PS4 feature.
Okay, what?
It has
the best sleep mode of any system. I love that. I love the sleep mode on the old PS4.
What makes it so great? I'm actually not familiar.
It's just a sleep mode, which other systems don't. You have to power it off.
Oh,
sleep mode, rest mode. It just wakes up super quick, as opposed to waiting for it to boot.
Cool.
Yeah, I like boring stuff about hardware, you guys.
It's the little things. You got to appreciate the small things disproportionately.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was Nintendo chat. Do we have any final thoughts before we move on to any other stories?
No, we should leave the business / tech corner for a while.
Yes, we probably.
Guys, I came home from work. Come on.
Now, this stuff's kind of fun to think about. I mean, especially when you don't really know anything. And you can just kind of, you know, combine words together in a way that makes you sound competent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I do all day anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, how's that different from work?
Yeah. Oh, man. What a time to be alive. So, Dennis, how about you? You got a story?
Yeah, I think I've got one little additional one. They've announced another Walking Dead game. And it's going to be done by the developers of Payday the Heist, which I was just thinking the other day that what the world really needs is just a solid, like, zombie co-op shooter.
Mm, yeah.
So it sounds like Starbreeze and Overkill are the developers on this. And you'll have a character, a set of characters from the Walking Dead universe that are essentially left for dead. And you get to, you know, fight for survival with friends.
Oh, it's like they don't have any real options, right? Like
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So it just great to see this kind of innovation coming out.
Well, Starbreeze doesn't make shit. Like, Starbreeze can make, like, they've made good stuff in the past. The Chronicles of Riddick games, The Darkness. I think they did Brothers as well.
Pro tip, Paul, that's usually not what people mean when they say they don't make shit.
That's true.
Oh, okay, I suppose. Yeah. They did Brothers.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Surprising to me. I thought it was like some weird Nordic company.
Mm.
Or is that Starbreeze?
Oh, yeah, that's Starbreeze. Yeah. They're based out of Stockholm,
there's
Sweden.
There's actually umlauts over several of the letters.
Yeah. It's not spelled anything like Starbreeze. It's a bunch of different letters, but because of the diacriticals, they managed to turn it into Starbreeze. Mm-hmm. looking at this here, I don't know, like, the last time they tried to do Walking Dead as a shooter, what was it? I forget what it was even called, but you were playing as
Bad. That's what you're thinking. It was Bad.
Yeah. I forget what the title of the game was, but you were playing as Daryl Dixon, and it was atrocious, right?
Yeah. God awful.
It reviewed poorly at the very least.
It's kind of funny. They've come out, and the guy who kind of announced that they're doing it, his main selling point was, this is not a marketing ploy for, you know, Walking Dead TV show. They very clearly want people to feel like they're going to make it a game first and not impose deadlines and stuff on it. So I'm sure it will be a good game. I just kind of I smile at the fact that we've kind of got a really good zombie shooter co-op first person game.
Yeah.
Although if they made it more the Payday style, I could see that being, you know, something that there is some market for.
Well, you're the one who's best positioned to know what the difference is. What would make it? What do you think that Payday could bring to a Left 4 Dead game?
All cops are zombies.
Take zombies hostage.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like, I don't know quite how. I don't like the whole zombie thing. So I don't know quite how, like, this translates to zombies. But you know, I think in terms of, you know, the Payday games are much more sophisticated, you know, much more team focused than the Left 4 Dead games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of, like, elements that, you know, could make it a different game.
It's more objective based, right?
Right.
So it could be, okay, you're holed up in this place, and there's a herd coming. You need to fend off as many zombies as you can, while, you know, so and so goes in and tries to you know, get as much medication as possible before you make your escape. Like, I could see, like, those little scenarios coming in, and you know, like being in effect. But I don't know. You have zombies, and the thing about them is they don't really have any AI. And from what I understand, a big part of what makes Payday pretty cool is that the police have these, you know, squad tactics, right?
Yeah, have squad tactics. Payday does some really good takes on the, you know, what would kind of be the equivalent of the special infected. Mm-hmm. So in terms of like, you know, there's like riot shield guys that can't be damaged from the front. Mm-hmm. And so, or, you know, there's, you know, people that can, you know, tase you and are, you know, will instantly down you, stuff like that. It does a really good take on, like, the special infected, you know, kind of that sort of mechanic.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, I don't know, Left 4 Dead 2, where the special infected are just kind of ways for the developers to screw you over.
Right. Well, and the Walking Dead universe doesn't really have any special infected.
Like, yeah,
they can't really add that in.
That's the thing that seems oddest to me is other than as a marketing ploy, why set it in the Walking Dead universe? Because I feel like at least my understanding, and this is entirely from like an outsider, like, you know, chatter from people who are fans, it seems like Walking Dead is basically, if you take away the specific like character interactions and story, is basically just generic zombie apocalypse.
Kind of, like a little bit. And the thing is,
yeah, I think that's purposeful. I think that's not the point, not the focus of The Walking Dead, is my understanding.
I mean, it's more about the interactions between people, which is, you know, any kind of apocalyptic horror where the actual disaster ceases to be more of a threat than the people who are around it. The problem is nothing about The Walking Dead has any emphasis on action. The way that they could get around the special undead thing is if you're fighting marauders or other groups or people who are trying to, you know, take you down, and they're, you know, you have different sets of people, different weapons, like they could vary it up in that way. So, you know, you're not going to lose intelligent enemies entirely. But, you know, action is the last thing I think of when I think about that. Just look at this past season of the show.
That would be an amazing concept for, again, a Left 4 Dead game, or for this game, is like, you know, you have your standard level that you go through as a 4-player co-op. But when you get to the end, the boss fight is not, you know, a computer-controlled opponent. The boss fight is another squad that has made it to the end.
Oh.
And so kind of you fought through all the zombies and hopefully you've been able to get all your teammates through. But then you have to go through one area and it's like only one group can get through alive. Mm-hmm. And you could have, you know, permadeath in that specific area or that choke point or whatever.
And
that would be really interesting.
And then like only a couple people survive. Only the last of us would survive all that. And, you know.
That's funny. Huh.
I'd play that until the dying light.
I'm going to throw in just like one final bonus one here. PSN, they just released Echo Knight, which is From Software's kind of first foray into survival horror on PS1 mm-hmm. Classics. It's like $6. Play it on your PS3 or your Vita or your PSP, you dummy.
Nice.
Yeah, it's super moody.
When you say survival horror, do you mean like straight up like Silent Hill style?
It's first person.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is all I will say.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we interact with you nice people. Dennis, what is the question that you put to our Facebook group?
Yep. I asked what games make sneaking around the most fun and which games screw it up the worst. So stealth seems to always be in games and definitely not always executed well. So I thought we'd talk about that.
Yeah. So I'm going to lead by reading Geo Law's response, saying, I love Monaco's stealth mechanics because half of the fun is getting caught and running away like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never played Monaco. Can you elaborate on how that works? Geo Law? Wait, where are you at? Jeffrey? Geo Dude?
We'll just wait for the comment to be updated.
Okay, cool.
See you guys in a week.
End credits. Yeah.
That's right. It's the game, it just accommodates people finding you really well. And it does, at least in the little bit that I played, it feels really good to just kind of barrel around the level trying to get away from people.
Nice.
Yeah, so, like if you read like any of the reviews of the game that came out, like the universal comparison is once you get caught, it becomes Keystone Cops.
Man, that is a crazy old reference. People call me old. Old at heart, I mean. Who here wants a Werther's Originals? Orange Slice, anybody? Let's see here. Ben, what's Sam say?
Sam says, Dishonored felt the best because the game really had mechanics based around stealth or combat. I would say that Shadow of Mordor does this too, except that it has stuff like stealth challenges that encourage gaming the system rather than organic gameplay, mostly around exploiting the hilariously small respawn distances.
Yeah. I could see that. Kind of akin to that, and I'm not going to make this my answer, but the comparisons to Arkham between Shadow of Mordor seem pretty apt. The stealth kind of like group fights in Arkham, in terms of staying hidden away and amping up the fear, that was pretty successful as well. Ben, can you confirm that is, you know, at least present in Mordor?
Yeah. Well, okay. So that was going to be my answer, was talking about Arkham. Okay. So I'll just go now. Comparing the two, so Arkham does a really great job because it'll start you off with, like, you know, in a room with like six or eight people that you need to take out stealthily, hopefully. But it's pretty forgiving stealth, though. Like, even if everybody sees you, you can swing around on gargoyles and like evade them or like lose them eventually, or you can like go under vents and lose them that way. So it's not like a Hitman sort of game or a Metal Gear Solid game where it demands perfection. Not to say that that's bad, but then also on top of that, it has a really good system where the more people that you take out in Arkham, the more difficult it gets to take the remaining people out. So like people will become more spooked. So they'll be turning around a lot more often and be, looking around and be more attentive. So it all around Arkham does a really good job with stealth, I think. And also that is very satisfying, making like the AI feel very scared, you know, like it does a good job of fulfilling that, you know, sort of feeling of being Batman. But Shadows of Mordor did not really do that as much. They have like you basically can climb up a building and kind of run along ledges and kind of lose people that way. And I'm pretty sure you can like dive down and like stab people. I can't remember exactly, but I did not really see it as much of a stealth game. I saw it more. I mean, it was similar to Arkham in the sense that you'd run in, trigger a fight, and then you'd have massive like crowd control until you killed everyone off. Like, that was very much the same, but the stealth elements did not feel as much there. There were a few missions where you kind of had to walk around and dodge people, but it definitely was not the same as Arkham. I thought Arkham did a much better job.
How much character building is in Shadow of Mordor? Because I'm wondering if any of it is due to the fact that he maybe built his character differently than yours.
They both have similar upgrade systems where a lot of the upgrades that you have will either unlock a new move that they can do, or it will like improve a move that you can already do. So a lot of it is kind of unlocking functionality, not upping specs or anything like that.
So you couldn't really specialize in stealth if you wanted to?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember in Shadows of Mordor like what ones would be specific for like stealth. Same thing with like Batman. I don't remember any off the top of my head that were, you know, necessary for making a stealth run, you know. So I don't think it was anything dependent upon, like, if you don't level this up, then you can't do a stealth run. I don't think there's anything like that in those games.
Yeah.
Technically, was it inverted takedown something you had to spend points on?
That might be true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can still take people out without doing inverted takedown. That's just one of the one button finishers.
Yeah. Let's hear David. What's Jacob say?
Jacob says Far Cry 3 wasn't necessarily a stealth game, but did have many stealth aspects to it. You could silently take out outposts by shooing an ammo cage from afar and unleashing wild ammos upon the unsuspecting guards. leaving you to watch them meet their impending doom as they spray their guns wildly at the charging tigers or savage ostrich-like thing. I never knew how much destruction an ostrich could cause until this game.
I mean, you have to watch out for their back talons. They just whoosh, lightning quick, and your guts are spilled all over the sand.
I think that's like velociraptors.
Damn it.
Here, or maybe here. Yeah.
Was I unwittingly referencing something?
Spilling your Jurassic intestines Park. Is from Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
Weird. Huh. I thought I was talking about ostriches, but okay. Continue, David.
I think this was actually going to kind of be mine. I really like the way stealth is done in Far Cry 3 especially. It's sort of, I know I referenced this when I was actually playing it, but it's less of a line of sight simulator and more about like guerrilla warfare and kind of keeping your opponent guessing.
Right.
So it's, you're not stealthy because no one ever sees you. You're stealthy because you're unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And so that's a lot of fun. I feel like I liked Far Cry 2. I like a lot of the ideas they have in their stealth. I really like the fact that, for example, only headshots are guaranteed to be stealthy. I like the... how like stingy they are with silenced weapons. I like the fact that they don't have the reset to, someone just tried to kill me, but then they ran away, so I guess I'll just return to just kind of sitting here. Like they don't have that. So they had a lot of good elements, but the actual stealth system itself was crazy broken, so that would maybe be my answer for games that really screw up stealth.
Yeah.
So and also the ostrich things are, they were maybe the animal in Far Cry 3 that I died to most often. they are pure feathery evil.
Our show has been called that before, pure feathery evil. Network, the network, rather. Yeah, there we go.
Thankfully, that insult just rolls off our backs.
Duck jokes. let's see here. Dennis, what does Franz say?
Franz says, Deus Ex, the sneaking itself isn't that good, but it's really satisfying to ghost an entire mission or game. The same goes for Human Revolution and Alpha Protocol. I really can't recall how the stealth in Invisible War was handled, so it probably wasn't that good. Okay, I wanted to pick Dishonored, best stealth ever, but Sam already took that one.
I don't get the appeal of Dishonored, but that's fine.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills every time it comes up on this show. I'm serious.
I don't think it's so much you. I think it's us, because I think we're the only ones that have stated we didn't like it.
It's okay. We will voice the silent majority.
Deus Ex, Human Revolution, I think, is much more solid in terms of its stealth as a mechanic, but Deus Ex does... I'm going to be vague due to story, but like it does some good things with the story with stealth that I kind of appreciated.
I mean, it was pretty early on in terms of actually honoring that choice of, being able to play, and it gave you just enough like sci-fi stuff in order to fudge, supernaturally running around. Like it definitely smooths over that better than Alpha Protocol does. In terms of like, you are so good at stealth that you can walk through the middle of a crowded hallway without people seeing you. Whereas in Deus Ex, just, I don't know, nanowogs bend light around you. Fuck. Like, it's a video game. Come on.
I think it's an interesting distinction on the thing that makes for a rewarding stealth is it recognizing you doing stealth. So like you would know and be rewarded if you ghosted a mission. Or, it just kind of makes nods to that. Even if, they're kind of fudging some aspects or the mechanics around it aren't perfect. The fact that it sees that you're doing it, trying to do it, accommodates it, and then recognizes you for accomplishing it is probably what makes stealth the most rewarding.
And as corollaries alongside that, it doesn't force you to do it. And also, you can try and do it, but if you fail, you just kind of bounce back, you know, assuming you aren't so drastically specced in the wrong direction.
So I'm going to defend Metal Gear Solid and Hitman because I do really like those games.
Oh, me too.
I know a lot of people typically don't like the stealth system maybe of it, but the thing I like about these games is there's kind of like a contract between the game and yourself where there is a way to get through any given room without being seen, even if all of your stats are crap with that game, since it's not really a stat building game. So it's more like a puzzle game, you know, like spotting the weakness in patrols, even if the patrols are unrealistic. You know, it's more of like a puzzle than it is any sort of frustration simulator.
Yeah, especially, you know, the Metal Gear Solid is a little bit more an action-based take on that. Hitman is a straight-up puzzle game in a lot of places. But something that hasn't really come up here, because I think that the franchise has fallen off the face of the earth, Splinter Cell kind of has that same, you'll fail instantly a lot of the time. But, like, the way that they kind of forged ahead using light and shadow, like, as soon as they have the ability to, you know, leverage that. To, you know, to use that capability of the system to render it, they made that a part of it, hiding from enemies, and it was so effective, especially like in Chaos Theory.
Splinter Cell, at least from what level I played, it seemed like more than kind of the particularly Metal Gear Solid, and then also to a certain degree Hitman. It seemed like they kind of, I don't know if you'd say like codified or kind of gamified their stealth, whereas it seemed much more, you know, comprehensible, like what I need to do to be stealthy in this situation and like why I wasn't. Yeah, you kind of know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm picking it up. Let's see here. Daniel writes in saying, the worst, Lords of Shadow 2. That's a Castlevania game. A game that had terrible stealth missions inserted between decent action sequences. The one that stands out is the Leaf Garden. You have a giant asshole guardian, whom you're supposed to avoid to get to the other end by hiding behind the walls. Problem is that there are leaves everywhere. Step on one and you'll get bum-rushed and sent back to the beginning of the area. even if you stay hidden and quiet, the guard will still hone in on your position, but at a moderate pace instead of a full sprint. And most of the walls you would hide behind have leaves covering the ground, negating hiding spots as soon as you step on them. God damn. You're given a hint that some bells you can target with projectiles will distract the guards, but they only work for about a second before the guard starts hunting you down again. The real solution here was to use Mist Form, a power you acquire about an hour ago that is never hinted to be useful for this section. Once you know that, the section becomes tolerable, but I struggled against this piece of stealth sequence crap for days when the game first came out. Yeah, that sounds just terrible. Isn't Lords of Shadow, that's like God of War, right?
Yes, and the first game was really good, and the second game I've heard is really bad, but I've never quite gotten an explanation for why.
This is the first game, didn't you?
That was my first platinum, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that game. And then I've just been scared away from Lords of Shadow 2, and this is the first like actual explanation of why it's bad that I've seen, so confirming that decision.
Yeah.
See, I feel like any game that has, like, as a rule of thumb, I'm not going to say all the time, but as a rule of thumb, if your game has a stealth sequence or stealth level, that's probably a good sign to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. That's probably true.
Yeah, it's like the Max Payne problem, right? We're going to make this game all about shooting as many people as possible, and then about 2/3 of the way through, we're going to take away all your items, and now you have to, you know, hit guards with submachine guns with a bat. Hit guards that are carrying submachine guns with a bat.
Or we'll make you do platforming.
Yes, no, actually, I do remember
blood
that
trail,
part,
the blood
yes.
trail.
Yep.
So frustrating.
Yeah, I remember I end up like turning on God mode.
Yeah, it was real, real bad. Let's see here. Ben, what does David say?
David says, Any game where getting caught doesn't mean the fun ends. Dishonored and Dying Light come to mind. Dishonored has tons of getaway mechanics if you're trying a no/low kill mode, or you can just kill them all. But you get rats. Dying Light has some great parkour, so running like hell from some of the big nasties is also panic-inducing fun. And yeah, that looks really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something that's kind of related to the stealth section kind of thing, like stealth elements as part of a regular game loop in an otherwise action-based game can really work. Like we talked about Batman Arkham before, but like a huge part of Hotline Miami is like trying to manage the number of people that you're trying to take down at once. Like you're trying to take down small parts of a room or a floor before alerting the rest because you're going to be overwhelmed, right? Or even using sound to your advantage to like lure people around corners by firing guns and stuff. Like that's incredibly rewarding, but it's hard to call it stealth.
Yeah, I do feel like one problem with some games that do that, and you know, this was, even though I think it has great stealth, this was like one complaint I had with Human Revolution, is I feel like sometimes some of that, it can get to where you basically have the decision between playing stealthy or playing stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's kind of like the only two options are, you know, either stealthing or just like charging, yelling Leroy Jenkins. Mm-hmm. I feel like I almost feel like I would like to see a game institute a more explicit, like, I know you maybe like an intimidation mechanic, or like, you know, kind of like a shock and awe type thing. Whereas instead of being stealthy, you could just try to, you know, move too fast and be too aggressive and keep the enemy off balance.
Yeah.
So like XCOM, if you could play as the aliens.
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh yes, yes.
They have intimidate.
And actually,
they have stealth,
actually, the one game that does kind of have that is, goes back to, what is it, last week, is Army of Two. Hmm.
Yes, yeah, Army of Two does a really good job with that.
Nice. David, what does Tanner say?
Tanner says, Mark of the Ninja might be the best 2D stealth game I've ever played. How did the team behind Shank get stealth so right?
Yeah, that was going to be mine, so that'll be my answer. Mark of the Ninja is a great stealth game, one of my favorites that I've actually played, just because of all of the interface elements that they use to really clearly communicate what the enemy can see and hear. Right? They, you know, so like this showed up kind of most recently in This War of Mine, where you had sound waves that emanated whenever you did anything, especially in a stealth zone, that showed, you know, roughly, you know, where people could hear you. But it was really done to perfection, I think, in Mark of the Ninja, because of the kind of the 2D graphics and the way that they played with, you know, shadow and the revealing what you could and couldn't see and like light sources. Like there's so much going on, but it is all readable at a really quick glance. And I would say like that is pro click for or pro play rather, for showing you exactly how you need to do a stealth interface right.
Didn't it kind of end up making it into being almost like a puzzle game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not...
That seems cool.
It's not one of those games where you can, like, rebound from failure really easily. It's not a Dishonored or a, you know, a Monica or whatever, like, where it turns it into, you know, a more fun game if you get spotted. But, like, it gives you plenty of feedback for, you know, whether you're going to get spotted or why you got spotted. Yeah.
Seems legit.
Really cool. Dennis, what's Phil say?
Phil says, the photo for the question is relevant. I put up a snake in a box. It's my snake in a box.
Nope.
Or did I not?
He toed.
You did a no-no.
Oh, okay. because I've just been taking a deep dive into the Metal Gear Solid series. I think they did an incredible job how they handled the stealth mechanic, offering multiple ways to get through a situation. Then, if you do it being spotted, you can still escape and try again, or try to rush to the objective. It also felt very fluid and fast-paced for its time, and I think the series holds up well to this day. Though, if you try to go back, the controls are really hard to relearn.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you accept that, you know, at least Metal Gear Solids 1, 2, and 3 are 2D games, you end up being much better off.
So, like, playing them from an overhead perspective? Or?
Yeah, I mean, that's how you play them. That's where they're presented, right?
Well, Metal Gear Solid 3 does not give you that option.
Yeah, it does.
Does it?
Top down?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about, like, the subsistence, like the 3D Splinter Cell camera version.
I was thinking of it's at a funny angle at all times.
I don't remember that. I remember it being top down.
Maybe see, we'll have, I maybe I thought we'll this was like third person shooter style. Am I smoking crazy pills?
I mean, that's closer to Metal Gear Solid 4.
Well, so 3 has the weird part of how you can either shoot in third person or you can shoot in first person, but it's easier to shoot in first person, like switch camera to that. But some of the, I know they have like fixed camera, kind of like God of War style, where they control where it is at certain points in the game.
In like certain sequences, but if you're just kind of like walking around a base trying to avoid things, it's going to be top down.
Okay.
I don't know, like just that's my recollection. I'm sorry. I'm not going to budge on this, Ben.
All right.
I'm very serious about my
What we have learned is that they actually created three different versions of the game and sent a different one to each of us.
It's the Clue equivalent of a video game. So, all right, think of it this way. Remember the fight with... All right, whatever.
No. All right. I mean, you can give a vague description of like what the fight is.
So I'm thinking of the first boss fight with the dude with the bees. Like, that's not completely top-down.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like a fixed camera.
Yeah, like it's a lowered camera that is going down for the cinematic, you know, boss fight that you're doing.
Is isometric what you guys are talking about?
Not really. It's just like it's taking a more cinematic angle, but you're still maneuvering on a 2D plane.
Can you draw a diagram?
Not really, because this is audio. You know, I'm gonna have to go back and play this. I know they updated it at a certain point for the PS2 re-release, and then for the PS3. But so we may in fact actually be. I know it was a goof earlier. We had a lot of fun, but we had
some laughs. We had some good times. Yeah.
but we may actually be referring to two different versions of the game. So yeah, the 3D camera one makes my stomach hurt and my eyes water, so I can't play that one.
Hmm.
Yeah, but boy, the camouflage in Metal Gear Solid 3 though.
And 4.
Did you like 4's camo?
I did, because it's so dynamic. It's so cool.
In that it just takes on whatever you press against?
Yeah.
I suppose. I liked dipping into the menu to like put on a different kind of camo and test different percentages.
Yeah.
Yeah, which makes me sound like a boring accountant, even more so than I usually do when I'm talking about the joy that I derive from spreadsheets, so.
Solid Snake, Accountant of Death.
let's see here. Fighting the Reconciler. Yeah. Dennis, how about you? Like what's your favorite example of stealth in a game?
Yeah, the one that came to mind for me was Assassin's Creed Brotherhood multiplayer.
Yeah.
Just cuz that, you know, that we've talked about already in this conversation, just the AI that kind of has to give up to a certain unrealistic extent. And so I think it really says something that could make feeling stealthy work when you're playing against other very intelligent opponents. I don't want to say very intelligent, other, you know, reasonably intelligent opponents, we'll say.
Other opponents that were no match for me.
Yeah.
Other foes that lay, you know, fall into my wake.
Yep. And an idiot who just dashed around the level.
Which is a pretty good way to score points, I might say.
It's a legitimate strategy. It's like the camping of Assassin's Creed.
Moving quickly and taking risks is the camping of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
I feel like it's also, you know, something at least I like, which is the fact that stealth does not have to equal line of sight simulator.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that would be my worst, is just the first Hitman games, when I went back and tried to play them, were particularly egregious, where it was very much based on line of sight, but it was very hard to discern what that line of sight was. So if you're going to be a line of sight game, fine, draw a line for me. So that gets really annoying really quick when there's that ambiguity on a game that is very harsh when you violate that line.
That's what makes me think you would like Metal Gear Solid 1 or 2, is because you can basically play it looking at the radar.
Nice.
I'm serious. Like, it gives you a cone that shows you what they can and can't see.
No, I appreciate that. I think, like I said, if you're going to do it that way, fine. Just do it that way. Mm-hmm. Instead of just assuming everyone magically knows where stuff is.
Yeah.
But Assassin's Creed, the main game, I never played that stealthy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it kind of...
People talk about the stealth in Assassin's Creed's game, and I just don't get it.
Like in the single player?
Yeah, like they say, oh, this game has stealth elements, but like aside from kind of blending into a crowd by pressing a button, I don't see it.
I mean, you can with like the climbing mechanics, you know, do it in some of the levels, but I know that was one of the things that they supposedly added in Unity, is they added a crouch button that apparently makes a explicit stealth mode. No idea if it worked, but...
I don't think anything about Unity worked.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed, very much stealth in the single player, was only useful after you had escaped. So it was kind of two, you escaped, that was the focus of the game, and then you just had to find a stack of hay to stealth, quote-unquote, in to get away.
See,
otherwise,
the
I don't
problem
think
is, like,
interesting.
Well, and the other problem is it very quickly became the best way to escape was to kill everyone.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
so it was kind of the payday approach to escaping from the cops.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about Batman, is they shoot you real quick if you try and go against them.
Exactly. No, that's honestly the thing that really disappointed me about Assassin's Creed, is that's what they initially pitched it as. And then that's not what it
is. Well, you talk about the contract that you have with the game, or that you make with yourself while playing the game, with Hitman, where, hey, it's a puzzle game. And I think Assassin's Creed is that very much to some extent. They're not going to make the combat system so that you cannot, win by going in and fighting everyone. At the same time, it's not really sophisticated enough to make it, you know, difficult. Like, you can very quickly get to the point where you've mastered it and will never die to a group because you can just kill everyone. So you kind of, do you play along with the game, or do you kill everyone because you can?
Yeah, I guess my thing is why I wanted Assassin's Creed to be is a game that was about like casing and planning your exit routes, and then like the assassination being fairly easy, but then the gameplay being like a parkour, like, you know, escaping from the, I don't know.
And maybe it is like that. You just have to manually restart if you get seen on the way in, versus the game auto failing you and sending you back.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, I play it as, you know, it's kind of, I've done this thing, and it's, as opposed to planning an escape, it's trying to identify an escape or a line or a route on a move. So it's a little bit like Tony Hawk with knives.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that's actually pretty good, honestly, pretty good description of it.
Which is fine. Like, that fits in.
I like that.
I like at least the first two Assassin's Creed 2 games. Yeah. God, that series, the first two of Assassin's Creed 2 games. just think about that sentence for a second. I'm going to finish that with a...
Cool.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh. I was just gonna say, not cool. Dennis, I'm kind of surprised you didn't mention for worst Valkyria Chronicles.
Valkyria?
Did that have stealth in it?
Yeah, the game where you're trying the level where you're trying to out stealth artillery strike with your leg broken.
Yeah, I remember that. No, you're right. That was more about not being able to know where the artillery strikes were gonna hit than stealth. That was horrible.
Yeah, it was basically a stealth game, if you randomly automatically died if you were standing within certain, you know, 30 foot by 30 foot circles with no indication of where those circles were.
Jeez.
I'd repress that. Thank you for delving that up.
I feel a little goofy because a little bit earlier in this section, I called Hotline Miami a stealth game. I just want to make sure that I'm clear about this, that I'm considering the act of having control over when an enemy sees and engages you a stealth element within a game.
Yeah, well, it's what David said about kind of guerrilla tactics being more that being stealth more than just managing line of sight.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure that people didn't think I was like just crazy or playing or playing Hotline Miami 2 in just a really weird way.
Ghost Run, no kills, Hotline Miami. I'm pretty sure I understand what this game's about.
You can't even leave the floor until like everybody's dead.
Yeah,
how'd you do that, Cole? Well, you see, Devolver made two different versions of the game. One just for me.
They clued it.
They clued it. I'm going to read Mikhail's here. Mikhail Christensen finishes out by saying, I'm going to agree with Mr. Wolf on the Mark of the Ninja. Super awesome good times. I like how the stealth mechanics were easy, possible, to understand and gauge. Also, The Long Dark, if I can stretch the criteria a bit, we're fine with that. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Well, not a stealth game. A bunch of sneaking around is required to avoid wolves, to not get dehydrated, avoid hypothermia, prevent strained joints, and so on. The slowed, deliberate pace of the game really works, even if the mechanics are not in squatting or disguises, but rather in sunlight, weather, time of day, and distance from shelter. You're not stealthing around legged beasts so much as the landscape itself. Think of it like human versus non-human stealth game, or even subject-object versus process, if you want to get philosophical. Like a stealth game, though, you need to choose your steps carefully in order to not get caught.
That makes me want to play The Long Dark.
It's super basic. I got it on a sale, and I played a couple of hours of it, and I don't feel like I penetrated enough to even talk about it on the show, which is really saying something.
Yeah.
Because I will talk about a game after playing it for 15 minutes. But yeah. It's interesting at the very least. I just need, at the time that I tried it, there wasn't really any kind of beginner's guide. Like, have you seen anything about The Long Dark aside from Mr. Christensen's description?
No, I honestly, the name sounds familiar, but I couldn't tell you a thing about it.
Yeah, I've got nothing. From the description, it sounds like someone made a simulator for The Gray, but I imagine that's probably not accurate.
Taken by Wolves.
Okay, I have seen this before.
Yeah.
Still no experience with it, but at least I recognize a screenshot of it.
Yeah. Let me check here and make sure that nobody snuck in right before the close. All right, looks like we're clear. All clear. I went in on the puns too, you guys. You had so much fun with those zombie game puns.
Wait, is that a reference to the Scientology documentary?
I'm recovering from a cold. Don't make me cough about Scientize. Come on. Oh, man. So thank you, everybody, for responding to that. Once again, it came out in force. If you would like to watch for those in the future, you can go to facebook.com/TheLevel Podcast, where Dennis is kind enough to put those up, on Tuesday afternoons. Yeah.
The Grind.
Now it's time for The Grind, where we talk about the video games we've been playing, over the past week or so. David, since you weren't here last week, I'm going to give you the first right.
Sure. I've mainly been continuing grinding on Destiny. So I was probably like 3/4 of the way through the main campaign last time. And so I completed that, and hit the level cap.
Mm-hmm.
Or the soft level cap.
The experience level cap.
Right, exactly. So I don't know. I feel like the campaign overall was fairly good. I feel like it's a little bit got some of the Borderlands syndrome, in to the degree of like it just kind of ends a little suddenly, and the ending is like something that you don't know it has any relevance until about the final boss fight.
Okay.
So
it doesn't earn anything? Like, it doesn't earn the stakes that you're fighting over?
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, like, unlike Borderlands, it sort of makes sense with the story, because, like, the second, say, half of the game is you trying to get to this location. And so, like, it's written as, like, hey, we've been told we need to get here, but we don't know why. So the fact that, like, when you get there, you suddenly figure out why you need to be there, probably from, like, a logical standpoint makes sense. It just maybe doesn't work quite as well from a story standpoint. But
yeah, I don't even remember the significance of the ending. So.
Well, and I would say the other thing with it that's a little weird is I don't know, like the significance of the ending could be anywhere, depending on how they actually play it, could be mean anything from like completely irrelevant, like we're just going to, you know, continue keeping on, to like you have defeated all of humanity's problems and like everything's fine now. So that's a little,
I mean,
weird.
They have to,
I think,
leave it open for whatever they plan to do with the rest of the 10 years they've promised you, right?
Right, right. And so that's kind of the issue is I don't know. Basically, there's this like godlike figure that's, you know, kind of the thing that started all this and that, you know, ushered humanity into a golden age. And at the end, they kind of just give this vague things of like, you know, it's been dormant and kind of dying for like, you know, centuries. And so, oh, now that you've done this stuff, like, you know, oh, you can, you know, this, we can now heal it. So it's anywhere from it could mean like just like, oh, vaguely, like you did something that's necessary for this to heal some point in the future that we're never actually getting to. Or it could be like, you know, we now have literally a god on our side. You know, so it's one of those things. I think part of it is there's four like antagonistic like alien races. And it kind of seems like they really doubled down on like this being the story of you dealing with one of them. And I know the first expansion really is focused around one of the other races. So I think maybe part of it is, you know, this is sort of they're going to have like, you know, a chapter that kind of really focuses in on each of the antagonists. So that was kind of interesting. Although I have to say, once you reach experience cap, I very much understand, and very all of a sudden you understand the criticism of the game.
What's the criticism of the game?
Well, just that, you know, just the criticisms of, you know, it being too short and grindy, and you know all the negatives. Like the game just comes to a screeching halt.
It definitely slows down.
But isn't that with the DLC or the extra content that they've kind of trickled out? Isn't that post game content or, you know, top tier content, whatever?
It is. I would say that's actually another issue is they integrated it very poorly. So part of the problem is that once you reach the level cap, it transitions from being like, you know, you advance by playing the game, to you advance by playing the game in these very specific ways. You know, specifically like you play these specific missions, you know, daily missions we tell you to play.
How is that any different from like WoW?
It's not.
I would say I think a couple of things. I think part of it is that WoW, you don't get to that point in like what, a week?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anymore, maybe. Like, haven't they sped up leveling a lot in order to, like, usher people to the post game?
Not that much.
Okay.
I think the other thing with it is it jumps directly from, like, the beginning of Endgame to, like, Endgame.
Okay.
So, like, it's a thing where, like, the difficulty of the game big time jumps. You know, it jumps from, like, being able to take, like, multiple hits to, like, to a single melee hit will kill you instantly.
Wait, of the same level, or is the person you're fighting against higher?
Well, and that's the issue. Higher, but you can no longer level up. So, and that's the problem, is because you have to play these specific game modes in order to advance, you have to play a game mode where, say, you're level 20 and the opponents are, say, level 22. And so it's a thing...
I mean, that's one of the things I thought was fair about the game, is, like, you always need to be fighting people kind of at your level or maybe one or two above you.
Right, and that's what I'm saying, though, is that works as long as you can level up and play levels that are appropriate. But once you hit the level cap, it becomes you have to play whatever the daily thing that... comes down the pike, and if the daily thing is, play this mission on level 24 and you're level 20, well, I guess you'll just have to deal with it.
Well, do they not have more options than that? I haven't played in a couple months or so, but while I was on it, there would at least be, like, a level or a mission for, like, every two levels, you know?
Those missions exist, you just won't get anything for them.
Yeah.
And I think the core issue, it's not that the game's too hard or too unfair, it's that it jumps, directly from a consistent, ramp up and consistent leveling to grind mode.
Yeah.
One of the other things is, most games, we'll eventually, like World of Warcraft eventually has, like, raid gear, raid level equipment, where it's just, the best gear in the game that you'll have to grind to. But there's still end game gear that, kind of ramps up to it. Whereas once you hit the level cap, literally any drops that are not of at least, like, whatever they're, like, ultra rare quality, I can literally just close my eyes and disenchant.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, there's absolutely no scaling. I feel like it's not so much that the end game is bad, it's that they didn't correctly handle ramp up to the end game.
Yeah, I mean, it does definitely seem like the first 20 levels are, like, kind of like a D&D or Knights of the Old Republic sort of leveling, and then everything after that switches to, like, an MMO sort of grind thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then the other thing that's kind of an issue is they didn't really integrate the expansion intelligently. So, like I said, once you hit max level, you have to play the specific missions they tell you to advance. The problem is today, all of these specific missions that I could play to advance were expansion missions.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically, if you want to play this game, pay us $20.
I mean, that's their business model, right?
I think taking away, not letting you play the game you've already played is not a valid business model. Adding on extra stuff is perfectly valid. Saying that you can't advance in the game you already own because you haven't bought the expansion is not a valid business.
But I mean, you've already outstripped the advancement that they allotted to you in the product that you bought.
No, it's not that. Like the level, the expansion increased the level cap from level 30 oh, 30 to 32. I'm level 24.
Okay.
But it's saying like the mission of the day is play a level 24 mission, but the specific mission they want you to play is an expansion mission.
Oh, okay. No.
So yeah, so it's, you know, it's got some issues. It's, you know, still, it's more just, it comes across to me like, you know, this is the team that, you know, made first person shooters, not MMOs. So I don't think it necessarily like long term, you know, hurts the gameplay, but it definitely, particularly, once the first, like, say, game to level 21, 22 is really rough.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, do you see yourself playing beyond this? I mean, are you going to buy the expansion? Or are you just kind of waiting to see what their next move is? Like, what's your...
Yeah. I think I'll probably buy the expansion eventually. Part of it is just, you know, trying to be frugal, you know, trying to save money right now. I think also... $20, from what I've seen, seems kind of right on the edge of being a reasonable price. It, you know, it doesn't, you know, for being one, well, half of what I paid for the game, you know, one third of the release price, it doesn't seem like it adds one third of the content.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit, you know, waiting for them to go down in price on the expansion.
Hmm.
So
I mean, it'll probably go on a sale probably sometime
right,
early
exactly,
summer. Yeah,
exactly. So, So yeah, so that's a weak thing. On the plus side, because I'm doing these higher level things, I'm actually grouping, and some of the group mechanics can be really, really well done. I'm playing kind of as the heavy weapons tank class, and it can be a lot of fun to have, like, you know, my teammate, like, you know, sniping enemies, and I kind of skirt around the side and then come in with assault rifles blazing. Like, there are some very cool moments in this game, so I'm still very happy with the game.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else?
No, that's really, really all I've been grinding on.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
Ooh, close one.
I made a last minute decision, by which I mean a last syllable decision.
So I finished up XCOM from last week. Won't really talk a whole lot about that. But let's see. I picked up Gat Out of Hell and played that. Same through.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, really? Okay. Nice.
Yeah, curveball. It was only like $17 on Amazon. You can get the code instantly, so that was pretty cheap. So can kind of piggybacking on what David would say, you know, it's about a fourth of the price of the game, and it feels like a fourth of a game, not as like an insult, but as like, you know, it, the price matches, you know, the content that you're getting. So I didn't feel chipped. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it basically feels like a Saints Row sort of like a... iteration from 4, I guess. Like, so the same way that 4 was kind of like a expansion of 3 and kind of like goofy and fun and good content, but improved some of the mechanics, it's kind of the same way with this one. It's definitely not as long as the fourth game was and is expanded. I played and beat this game in like a day's time, so it's definitely a shorter game. But it's still slightly entertaining and
slightly.
Nah, but the intro video is very funny. And
is that the musical or is that a?
Yeah, so you can, if you read the box as far as what is in the game, they tell you pretty much everything that's in the game, and it's good. But it's just not, you know, there's not an extensive amount of content there,
right?
So you definitely, I mean, you do, it's a very similar experience as Saints Row 3 and Saints Row 4 as far as, like, leveling up. The only thing is it's just quicker, I guess. So, like, you know, you kind of, as I said, you can beat it in a day. So, you know, it goes by pretty quickly. It's not a bad game, but, yeah, I mean, it's definitely kind of more of the same. It's enjoyable, but it's not going to be, like, on a best of list or anything, you know, at the end of this year. So
I forget exactly where you came down on Saints Row 4, Ben.
Pretty much the same way I come out of this, where it's like, you know, I enjoyed it when I played it. Their games have really solid writing, and like they're very funny, and there's moments when you play the Saints Row games that are more fun than almost any other game, you know. Mm-hmm. But the thing is a lot of it is based on like writing and like kind of surprise. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really make for like long-term quality, but it makes for very enjoyable short-term quality.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I think of the series. And so this is kind of like that, where it's, you know, it's very enjoyable. So I don't, you know, yeah, I mean, I definitely don't mind buying it and beating it in a day. So I, you know, like I had a good time with it, but yeah, it's, I wouldn't go and say that it's, you know, going to be a game changer or anything like that. So
did you play as Gat or Kinsey?
I played as both. For the majority, I played as Gat, and then finally I wanted to see what Kinsey would be like, and so I switched. But it's they're pretty much the same experience, just different voiceover.
Yeah.
But
talk to me a bit about like flying around too, because like that's the big thing that they bring to it, right?
Yeah, it's very similar to what you could do in the Matrix one. I guess the difference is, I was trying to remember this. You can fly in the Saints Row 4, right?
I was going to say, you can definitely fly in that game.
Yeah.
Well, you can jump and glide predominantly.
Yeah, but it's not like flight. Okay. You're still going to come down to the ground.
Yeah, so this is maybe, so whereas with that one where your height slightly decreases over time, this one you stay level over time. That's mm-hmm. like the only difference, I would say. So it's very similar mechanics. Most of the good things I can say about the game kind of spoil it, so I don't really want to go too far into that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the atmosphere is basically you're in hell, you know, since the premise is you go to hell to save the boss and or save somebody, and yeah, so it's basically, and whereas everything in Saints Row the 4 was like a Matrix version of Steelport, this is a hell version of Steelport. So I mean, it's enjoyable to see like the changes that they made to the world, but again, you know, so it's enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think they're going to go with this? I mean, do they seem like they're setting up for any sort of sequels or anything? It seems like, you know, they've kind of, to a certain degree, written themselves into a corner in terms of how can they, you know, do something that's more over the top than, you know, what they've been doing.
And it's surprising, too, because they keep continuity, you know? So, like, you see on, you know, like, you see some of the aliens from the fourth game, like, in this game, you know, like, it's, so they don't, like, just throw away stuff that they've done, you know? Like, it's continuous, you know? So, and, yeah, so I won't say who, but, you know, like, so in hell, you see some people from the Saints Row universe that have died, you know? So, you know, like they do keep a consistent story arc, but yeah, I have no idea how they're going to go from here, especially since the last two games, they make you be able to fly. I don't know how it'll be hard for them to take that away, you know, and turn it back into a Grand Theft Auto sort of game.
They just need They just need the classic scene from the start of every sequel where you start with all your powers and by the end something crazy happens that strips you of them all one by one.
Like in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood where Ezio gets hit by a cannonball.
But he gets medicine by a beaky dude.
Yup.
I actually don't like the flying because I don't like that they trivialized the driving mechanic. I really, really enjoyed customizing the cars and stuff like that. So I would not have a problem with them taking away flight.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have said something really similar, like where can they go from here after the Matrix thing? But obviously they go to hell. Right, like they had something else at their sleeve, and I think that there's a case to be made, or it's been written about, that like a bunch of this is content that Deep Silver or THQ was developing and kind of like sitting on, kind of in the same way that the Saints Row 4 was an expansion pack. Like this is stuff that they had just kind of been developing that they are putting out to try and fund whatever they're doing next.
Right
so like this isn't really a new product, so to say.
Yes. And I don't, and the nice thing is I don't think they're selling it as, where Saints Row 4 felt like that they were trying to brand it as the next game and it was kind of just an expansion. This one is definitely an expansion. You know what I mean? It's not, they do have, where you can buy it with Saints Row the 4 as like a, I don't even know if it's a full price game, but as a, like a moderately priced game. But yeah, I do, I'm appreciative of the fact that they're not trying to sell this as a full length game.
Anything else?
Nah, that's it.
How's that musical? Like, I was really bummed out that that was pretty much just their that the pre-release, like the trailer for it, was just the height, like the height of what they do, like the best scene from the game.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, it's enjoyable. I kind of went in cold, so I hadn't seen that before. Yeah, I mean, it's, they do a musical number. It's that, I don't know what a, I don't know what else to say besides that. Yeah. Smack in the middle of the game, it's like, oh, a musical. All right, cool.
That's neat.
And
yeah,
then, and then they never do it again. So it's like, right on. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it, I mean, you know, the humor is being consistent in all the games. So I mean, if you like the previous two iterations of the game, you would like this. But yeah, yeah, it's just kind of a bite-sized version of it. So
yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to go because I have two kind of like quick check-ins, mm-hmm. I think, because I haven't really played much new, but I just have some stuff to add about things I've talked about before. So I haven't gotten too much further in Hotline Miami 2, although I continue to be astonished by what it does with the story.
Okay.
I saw what probably has to be one of the most disturbing death scenes I've seen in a game.
Ooh.
Which, again, this is rendered in super like low pixel kind of style, but with lots of blood splatter and some pretty disturbing like text, right?
Mm.
The Hotline Miami games aren't even voice acted,
right? Yeah, I don't want to, like, it's relatively early on, like it's in Act 3 or whatever, of I don't know how many acts, but it's only, I'm only a couple hours in. I don't want to take the wind out of those sails, though. But it's it is something something else entirely, I think.
Third act usually means late in the game.
Yes, it does. But this has this has multiple acts, far more than I have than I have seen so far. So I continue to really like the fans, which are kind of like the five people who are trying to recreate the character from the initials from the initial games, his spree, right? I kind of just recently came across a set of characters who are some twins who wear goose masks.
Okay.
Which I'm not kidding about that. And they play different from anything else I've seen, like even more different than the guy who tries to avoid lethal weaponry, right?
You play both of them at the same time?
You play both of them at the same time. So you have primary movement control over one of them who has a chainsaw.
Okay.
And your other twin kind of like follows close behind, and with your right clicks they fire a really high powered pistol. Right.
Huh.
And so it's really difficult because you can't quite manage the position of the guy who has the pistol. And it's the mission where they first become available. So I felt like they were trying to tell me, hey, use these guys on this mission. And it takes like a long time, yeah, like longer than usual to kind of get over the initial hump to figure out how to play them. But it was really, really rewarding because this is a game that, you know, has a relatively basic setup, but this was the biggest curveball that they've thrown me yet. And it's really, really great when it finally clicks and works.
Nice.
All right. I'm likely new to this. Can you choose who you play as for a given mission?
So this is different than Hotline Miami 1, where you are always kind of playing at the same as the same guy, with a couple of exceptions, story-based.
Okay.
And the same guy with different masks that all have, you know, relatively different powers. Not relatively, completely different powers sometimes. You know, minor modifications to the way you play. But you have access to all of them no matter what. In this, because the story is kind of shifting perspective from one character to the other, between like I think 9 total characters who have different either innate abilities or different masks that give them different abilities, it's more constrictive about what kind of powers it's going to give you to try and tackle any given mission.
Okay.
Yeah. So this one pops up anytime you get to a mission with the fans. You have the most options, and they have kind of the most widely varied kind of like play styles out of the rest of them. But it works really well.
Mm.
Yeah,
cool.
I would still say like this is one of the best games I've played this year so far, at least cool. Of games that have come out this year.
Nice.
So that's Hotline Miami 2. I'm also rounding the bend on Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright. Made a lot of progress on that over the past week or so. I'm going to kind of go out on a limb here and make a statement that is half kind of weak and half very strong. This is the best Professor Layton game I've played, even though I only ever played the first two before this. And the strong side of that statement is this is the best Phoenix Wright game I've played in years, like at least since the first initial trilogy. Like, you know, I can kind of take or leave Apollo Justice and, Dual Destinies. I've talked about Dual Destinies at length, but this kind of gets back to basics in a really kind of satisfying way while still kind of changing the game in the trial section, a great deal. Right. So you're dealing with kind of like less convoluted overall cases. It's like a lot of like lock room kind of stuff or instances where there are kind of like direct contradictions of the testimony. But the big wrinkle that this game kind of provides for you is like group testimonies. Right. So, Dennis, I think you're the only person here who has played a Phoenix Wright game other than me. Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if the others have or not. I have played one. I can confirm that first part.
Yes.
I have not played one.
And Dennis, or sorry, David, you have not.
No, I've not played any of them.
Okay. The bulk of the game has to do with you're in a courtroom and you've got a witness, singular, who is giving a testimony, and you have to kind of press them at strategic points, asking for further details and present evidence that contradicts the facts of what they're saying, right? To either catch them up in a lie or reveal more information until you ultimately reveal who the real killer is and get your client off the hook.
And is your client always innocent?
Yes.
Ah.
Objection.
Yep. But what this does is, because this is kind of a medieval society that is doing witch trials, they have a bunch of witnesses who come up and try and do like a kangaroo court. How about a banana court, which would be delicious. like a kangaroo court, and the testimonies are given like one statement from each of them. Right. And so they're, different people kind of Rashomoning together their own version of the same story that they're trying to tell. And what's great is when you're pressing one of them and they reveal a detail that contradicts what somebody else saw or what they said, you'll hear a little boo, and you have to scan all of them and see who is reacting, negatively to that and call them out. And like, it's not always best to call them and say like, hey, can you go on this, because sometimes it's a dead end. But it's a way to not just use evidence against testimony, but a way to use other testimony against testimony, specifically cool. Because you're dealing with a society that doesn't know how courts work.
Wait, as opposed to all the other Phoenix Wright games, in which case the courts are completely just.
Right. I mean, just in terms of like the naivete of how crazy this this witch hunt is, kind of plays into it, and like that is a wonderful confluence of adding this new mechanic in that is justified by the story and the atmosphere in the world.
Sure.
Yeah. But it's great. Like, I would totally recommend, if you are a fan of like either of these, which is a weak recommendation, fans of the genre or whatever. But like, even if you haven't dipped into it for a while, like I haven't played a Professor Layton game in a very long time because I kind of find them pretty bland. But like, when you're just kind of mixing back and forth and jumping back and forth, you can ignore the story, or the story of a Professor Layton game is shored up by the relatively more complex story of a Phoenix Wright game. And you get down to like how fun it is to solve little puzzles.
Wait, so did you just recommend the game with the statement, this game is great, you can ignore the story?
Not really, no. how dull and kind of saccharine the story of a Professor Layton game to my sensibility, right?
Okay.
That is taken away. There's still a little bit of that there. Like, Professor Layton is barely a character, and his little sidekick, the most interesting thing about him is that he can talk to animals for some reason, which I never knew that. So when you just started talking to animals, I was like, what happened? but yeah, like it's like their weaknesses kind of offset each other, and the pacing is such that you always can jump over to the thing that is more interesting right when you cease being interested in the thing that it's having you do.
Sure. So okay, that makes sense.
Could you play this game if you've never played either of the games in the series before?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, it's not hinging too much on your familiarity with like any kind of in jokes or mythos, and the characters are broad enough that you can kind of pick up on what they are. Like Phoenix Wright's kind of hapless, and you know he's got this sidekick who's you know goofy and well meaning but kind of clumsy, and you know Professor Layton again barely a character, and Luke can talk to dogs. And then every other character is kind of new, and they do a really good job of like ramping up to like the mechanics. Like it's not hinging on any kind of prior or advanced knowledge.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It is a delightful surprise. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it so much, kind of hot off the heels of Dual Destinies, but it's great. And it is not, like a cash grab or like an attempt to, you know, work in some kind of gimmick. Like on some level it is gimmicky, like these two characters from vastly disparate.
it's like the equivalent of a crossover episode.
Yeah, kind of. But like, you know, instead of the Jetsons meet the Flintstones, which doesn't acknowledge the fact that they both take place in the same time and the actual surface of the planet that the Jetsons live on is a stratified society where up above the clouds they live in futuristic bliss, but down below they live, you know, in like barely subsisting, and you know they have to tolerate being talked back to by their record players.
Barely subsisting. Have you seen the size of ribs he gets at the drive-in movie theater?
Well, but I mean, five people had to die to kill that dinosaur. Come on. Like,
it seems like there's classism at every level then.
I know, right? Like, people don't realize this, but Fred Flintstone is a plutocrat.
Class warfare all the way down.
Yep. All the way down to the blasted, barren, post-apocalyptic Stone Age society of the Flintstones. Yeah. And that's all I've been playing. That's all I can really comment on.
Cool.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
I haven't played shit new. So it might come to a screeching halt here. I've played a little more Dungeon Defenders and a little more XCOM and a little more Ollie Ollie 2. But all those I've kind of said what I wanted to say about. The one new thing, which is kind of like video game related because it's on PlayStation, is I watched the first couple episodes of Powers.
Mm. Oh, that looks good.
It is good. Yeah. The concept, I'm not familiar with the comic books, but the concept is that it's kind of, it follows a police division in charge of, enforcing the law to people who have superpowers. And so it's kind of very focused on the people without powers in a world that's filled with people who have superpowers. And those people are kind of, speaking of, you know, upper classes, those people are kind of, celebrities and, you know, treat themselves as better. So it's very interesting in terms of a concept. I will say that in the first episode, I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit at the fact that they wanted to be like, we're super not rated, you know, we can be dirty, whatever superhero film stuff. Cause they, you know, the very first scenes, some guy gets thrown into a wall and there's just an obscene amount of blood everywhere. It's like,
Watchmen already cover this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, this kind of sounds like a less mopey version of the Watchmen.
That's actually, yeah, that's a very apt, comparison. Yeah, less mopey for sure. So you know, once they get that out of the way, and the rest of the film is not that pulpy at all, so it's kind of feels very out of place.
Pulpy.
But the rest of the two episodes that I watched kind of set up a really interesting story. It's less about who can do what superpower wise and more about kind of the histories of the various characters and why they're doing what they're doing.
How do they arrest people though?
With their charm.
Yeah. basically shoot them full of enough tranquilizers to keep them docile. Okay. Or you know, there's they talk about, you know, standard police squads wait for hero backup, and basically, like, if there's a power out there causing havoc, you do not engage with them. That's, you know, you wait for a hero to come help. Someone else with superpowers will help solve it. Whereas this division is like, no, screw that. Like, we're gonna try to make a difference on our own without necessarily having help. And the big hook is that the guy, that the main character that this follows, used to be a power. But through some series of events, which has not been fully explained yet, he lost his superpowers. And so he used to be a hero, and is still trying to find any way he can to help, but he's kind of down to earth, literally, as he tries to continue to make a difference.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Can I guess how the season ends?
Go ahead.
He gets his powers back.
I think that might even be in, like, the this season on Powers reel. So.
Fuck. Guys, I thought I was prescient.
I'll let you know how it turns out. It's confusing the way they released it, though, because they released the first three episodes. And then I'm not sure how frequently they are releasing the following episodes, but I really, you know, I like the Netflix, post a whole season at once gig. And I'm not sure why Sony wouldn't just straight up imitate that.
Yeah. That's weird. They're doing Community that way too. They put out the first two episodes today and then they're trickling them out weekly.
Yeah. I'm not sure I understand that. So Community, it doesn't make sense for dramas. We're like, you know, think like Lost, where part of the fun is like talking at the water cooler, having different theories, trying to figure it out. That works. I guess I could see that making sense.
But like the most successful example of that in recent years was House of Cards.
Yeah, and everyone could binge on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Or the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is a delightful show.
What is the show about?
It's about a woman who was kept in a bunker in Indiana for 15 years by a guy who was leading an apocalypse cult.
Okay,
and
yeah,
she was freed,
yeah.
And she's trying to make her life in New York City after years of being kind of like isolated away from society. It's basically the plot from Blast from the Past,
but without Brendan Fraser.
I was kind of confused because like the pitch I heard was like, woman freed from apocalypse cult, and then like everything I've heard about it has just been that it's like real fun and mm-hmm. you know, not,
yeah,
you know, it's someone dealing with debilitating PTSD.
It's unrelentingly positive and cheery, but it's got streaks of darkness that are really, really dark.
Okay.
Yeah. Continue with Powers though. Like you wish that they like so where do you come down? I forget. Do you wish that they had put it all out at once, or are you just kind of baffled by their decision?
I want to binge it, even though, like I said, I've still got one episode that's released that I haven't watched, but I don't like having that artificial limit. And I guess you guys all have access to it through PlayStation Plus as well, but I'm not going to be like dying to talk with someone, you know, at work about this. So I'd rather just kind of have the option to get through it when I have the opportunity to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's intriguing to say the least so far. And when it's not overly trying to be adult, it's pretty good.
I'm really put off by, if you look at all of the marketing, and they've done a lot of marketing around this, which is admirable for them, right? Like, this is a really niche kind of thing. If you own a Sony gaming product, you can, you know, watch this thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. But all of the marketing seems to revolve around from the studio that brought you Breaking Bad.
Oh, I hadn't even seen that.
Really. Oh yeah, like everything. Huh. It's, you know, it's technically the same studio, like the same production company, but not the actual, you know, studio of people who like put that together. Like, I don't know that there's anything beyond like administrative talent that has like any kind of say in the creative of the show.
Gotcha.
So it's Breaking Bad is a Sony production, but it's a pretty crass like grab for kind of prestige or authority.
Yeah, I was about to say that is a hell of a calling card. You know, if it's the same group of people, but if it's not, then yeah, that's
yeah. Those people are doing Better Call Saul, and they're kicking ass at it.
I was gonna say does Saul have superhero powers in the prequel? Or
he's got super truth bending abilities.
Then he lost. Yeah.
Saul Goodman, the last truth bender. Yeah. I'll be curious. Do you know how many episodes are doing this season?
I think it's a 13-episode season.
Okay, respectable.
Yep.
Nice.
Which I almost wondered if they were, you know, we'll release the first three, see how they do, and then we'll tell you whether or not we're going to make more. Mm. But I think they're committed all the way through.
Yeah. That actually just might be the new thing in general, even though Better Call Saul is probably not, you know, doesn't have to struggle too much, but they released two episodes, like, in two consecutive days for that, and I guess Community is doing that too.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just now a thing.
I'm down. Like, get people hooked, get them wanting more, give them a little bit more, and then lead them along.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in a position where I'll frequently have the chance to binge on a season, so it's not like this is cramping my style. Yeah. It's just like whenever the opportunity strikes to watch an episode, I'd like to be able to take it. And you know, after the next episode, I'll be kind of out, depending on how frequently they're going to release them.
Yeah, it'll probably work out to where you, like, by the time you get time to watch it, that you'll have a couple banked up.
Yeah, that's I need to establish a backlog, and then I'll be fine.
Yeah, that's worked out really well in the past. I'm sorry, you're not me. So is that all, you guys?
I think that's it.
Cool. Want to button it up?
Yeah, 11:30 on the dot for anyone who cares about that kind of inside baseball.
Yeah, we do this on a school night, you guys.
Our craziness. Man, not for David, not tonight.
I suppose, yeah, spring break.
Right, yeah. Spring break. We break no rules.
Lift your top up.
The credit. Sorry, go to Freeze and get some beads.
I actually just got back from Freeze right before we were started recording.
People are going to triangulate where you live.
Good man.
Above Freeze. We have said that on air before.
Yeah, I suppose we have. Oh, for all you Cincinnati locals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love it when we occasionally just go into, like, hyper local Cincy cast.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, so thank you so much for listening to episode number 98 of The Level. We've really enjoyed having you, as we've enjoyed recording it. So next week, I'm probably not going to be here because Bloodborne is coming out. Mm-hmm. And so we are trying to work out something that we can do. I will leave it up to you, Dennis, to decide when and where and how we announce that. Because cool. I know that you're still going to have to do some kind of, like, organization around it. But something will happen.
Yeah.
even if it is a tweet saying, hey, no level this week. So I left it wide open.
Something.
Yeah. No, the sun came up.
We're going to try to do a bonus level that we have talked about doing frequently. So
yeah, one that doesn't require me to be there. So yeah, that is enough clues for any loyal listener to guess what we're fainting at. But we could do something entirely different. Yeah. So until next time, you know, just all the usual stuff. You know, we're always looking for iTunes ratings and reviews. We're always looking for Facebook likes, as that kind of, like, crawls up, that, you know, like, we like watching that number get bigger, just for posterity and for the audio of the show. I would like to say how many Facebook likes we have at the point, so people can say, hey, these are pretty cool guys. 118. So, like, hop in there and make that number bigger. Let's aim for 200, guys.
Woohoo! And the 100, this marks it, though. If you were in that original 118 that got called out before the 100th episode, you can't replicate that.
Yeah.
You were the early adopters. You picked it up sometime in the first 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody who already is a Facebook fan of ours. And if you are, you know, going there right away, welcome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just about everything. So for The Level, I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia, at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been, at one time, David Moneysmith on Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
I've been Merkelizer I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter. Yeah, I know my name.
And until next time, I'll stick around after the song to hear us decide which title we're going to use. Let's see. I'm just going to go down the line. Moving Quickly to Camp. Tony Hawk with Knives.
Okay.
They Clued It. A Last Syllable Decision.
Ooh. I really like Tony Hawk with Knives, but A Last Syllable Decision is also really, really good.
I was going to say it's between 2 and 4.
I thought there was one other thing you said very close to the end that would have been a good title, but I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Yeah,
I should have wrote it down.
I think A Last Syllable Decision is the best. Tony Hawk with Knives is funny when you know you're talking about Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
Although I would say the one thing is that Tony Hawk with Knives is something that I would love to see as a Patreon reward.
Just make a whole game? Is it just a Photoshop of Tony Hawk holding a knife?
No, just send them the game Tony Hawk with knives in the box as well.
Just get a bunch of parry knives. Can you mail a knife?
Yes. Yes, you
sure.
He was very quick to respond with that.
I just received a knife in the mail.
Oh, cool.
From one of his students, yeah.
It's from Mr. Hawk.
Yeah, one T-Hawk. Ooh, T-Hawk from Street Fighter. Great. I'm looking at this here. There's a game called BloodNet that was made by Microprose in 1993 that apparently is a... It is a RPG. It's a cyberpunk RPG where you play as a vampire, which kind of feels like Gilding the Lily at that point.
It's also a German tampon brand.
Ooh.
Sorry,
I don't like that one bit. You could have helped. You knew what you were going to do.
Wait, BloodNet or Gilding the Lily?